Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. My name is Kyle, and I will be riding with y'all for the next hour. Super excited to be back here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Super happy to be chatting with all of you after a Super Bowl week that left me feeling bitter and disappointed. If you listen to us chatting with the game chat guys last week, you know that I was well in on the Mahomes train. The injuries piled up, and that's actually where I want to lead off with today's episode. And we'll get to the Russell Wilson stuff later that I want to chat about here, but I won't be able to get to on the podcast. Maybe tomorrow. We have a Stripe Hype episode tomorrow, so maybe be on the lookout for that. I spent 4 hours yesterday doing a skit on Andrew Luck and the first public interview with Andrew Luck. So if you're listening to this, I appreciate if you would go show your support for that. It's Take It Easy. You can find it everywhere that you get your podcasts. If you're looking for ours specifically, it's from CKSAML Productions, which is the combination of my initials and our comical sports memes title, which you can check out on Instagram as well. I've been plugging stuff for way too long. I have too much stuff to plug. It's kind of a problem. But anyways, we'll get to Russell Wilson stuff later. Jesus, I just realized I have so much stuff plugged. The Instagram, I plugged the podcast, I plugged the radio show, I plugged Open Talk Radio 313, The Flash as a whole, because this platform is absolutely amazing with all sorts of great content. Did I mention the other Instagram? Did I mention we have a blog as well? You can check that out as well. There's just way too much stuff that I'm trying to promote, so check all of that out. That's all I got to say, because this is now 3 minutes into the show now, and I'm still plugging stuff. It's just ridiculous. I just realized how long I'm trying to talk and plug stuff at the same time. Anyways, let's get to the Chiefs. Let's get to the main topic of the day, because as I'm starting to get out of Super Bowl mode, because first of all, Happy New Year. It's the new year on the sports calendar. And so as I start to get into that mode, sorry about that. I just needed a cough button real quick. As I start to get into the new year mode, I really hope that you couldn't hear that on that one. But anyways, so now as we've gone out, I was thinking this afternoon about the legacy of the 2020 Kansas City Chiefs, who dominated this NFL season unlike any team I've seen in my life. Even though statistically last year's Chiefs team was technically more dominant than this year's team, it just didn't feel like it because there were some early season losses and some injuries that kind of messed up the numbers a little bit. But I keep coming back to the 2019 Golden State Warriors in my head. And for those of you who may not remember, that team was when the Warriors were coming off a sweep of the Cavaliers. They won the NBA Finals. The J.R. Smith game was the lasting image of it, but it was a four-game sweep. LeBron left Cleveland for Los Angeles. He punted on that first season because he had like Lonzo and Brandon Ingram and all the young kids, and he pulled his groin. So LeBron punted on the season, and there was no legitimate threat to the Golden State Warriors, who then went out and signed Boogie Cousins coming off an Achilles injury using their mid-level exemption. And the closest thing to them was that Rockets team with James Harden and Chris Paul after the 0-for-27 game that they lost in Game 7 against the Warriors. It was after that where Chris Paul and James Harden were having beef. They finished with the fourth seed in the Western Conference, and it just felt like it was all falling apart, which it was. It just took a couple more years for it all to officially fall apart in Houston. Back to the Warriors. Throughout that season, I kept hearing and saying that the only way the Golden State Warriors lose is injuries. It's the only way that a team with this much star power, from Kevin Durant to Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Boogie Cousins, along with Andre Iguodala still being on that team, the only way that they lose is injuries. And so even through a locker room implosion, Kevin Durant cursing out a Warriors reporter, and the constant rumors that KD was going to team up with Kyrie Irving in New York, which went on from about February until they actually signed with the Brooklyn Nets. Through all of that, we were all just filling time with the drama as the Warriors were not having fun, as Steve Kerr attests in The Victory Machine, which is a great book that you should check out as well, as I continue to plug stuff that's not even mine anymore. This is just Ethan Strauss's book. Anyways, all of it was just buying time until the Warriors could get to the playoffs and beat up on the James Hardens and the Patrick Beverleys of the NBA. And this reminded me of the Chiefs in more ways than one, because first of all, the Chiefs were a defending champion who was clearly outmatching every team in the AFC. The regular season had been rendered useless since the Chiefs could have gone 16-0 if they had really wanted to. A strange 40-33 loss to the Raiders was the only blemish on their 14-1 season before they benched all their starters in Week 17, which wasn't really the Chiefs, but it technically was players wearing the Chiefs uniform. So the only three games that mattered for the Chiefs were the playoff games they were playing in January and February en route to the Super Bowl, which was the exact same scenario as the Golden State Warriors. The playoff series were the only ones that mattered, and the expectation was championship. Injuries got in the way of both of these championship runs. And so there's some striking parallels between the two that I want to focus in on, and ultimately we'll get to a point where we're just alternating storylines here. So we're going from basketball to baseball, or basketball to football, back to basketball, back to football. I want to see how this goes, because the parallels are so striking that a comparison of timelines is really perfect for this story. So in the Chiefs' first playoff game versus the Browns, Kansas City was in cruise control to the AFC Championship game, and Patrick Mahomes tore his plantar plate in his foot, which he was able to play through by wearing a special shoe for most of these games. In the first round series versus the Clippers, Kevin Durant injured his calf, hobbled off the court with concern that something may have happened to Durant's Achilles. And fortunately, it was only a strained calf, but that's also an injury that requires anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks to recover from. And so Durant was out for the foreseeable future for the Golden State Warriors. And yet the Warriors were able to keep winning without Kevin Durant. They beat the worn-out Houston Rockets in 6 games, playing in the de facto Western Conference Finals that happened to be in the second round of the playoffs. Then they played the actual Western Conference Finals against the Portland Trail Blazers, who were just happy to be there. The Blazers went 7 games with the Nuggets. CJ McCollum had an epic game in Denver to help them win the series. Like, they were just happy to be there. And so the Blazers swept them in 4 games, advanced to the NBA Finals, even without the team's best player. Kansas City, an injured Patrick Mahomes, routed the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship game. The offensive line gave Mahomes just enough protection against the poor Bills pass rush. And it was really a microcosm of Buffalo's season more than it was the Chiefs, because Buffalo found themselves in a position where defense couldn't apply pressure, offense couldn't get any protection from Frank Clark and from against Derek Nnadi and against the rest of that Chiefs defense with Chris Jones and all those guys. Just no time for Josh Allen to make plays happen. And so at the end of that game, the Chiefs lost former number one overall pick Eric Fisher to a torn Achilles, which made him the fourth starting offensive lineman and fifth total offensive lineman to be lost for the season for the Chiefs. Because if we go back to the beginning of the year, the Kansas City Chiefs had two opt-outs due to COVID. The Kansas City Chiefs had injury to left tackle Mitchell Schwartz and left guard Kelechi Osemele, and both of those dudes were gone for the season. They had already lost the guy who was a doctor, and they lost Lucas Niang at the beginning of the season. So Kansas City was going in without five of their offensive linemen. So on the other end, the lack of a go-to scoring machine was a problem for the Golden State Warriors as they faced off against Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Lowry, and the Toronto Raptors in the NBA Finals. And the lack of an offensive line was a problem for the Chiefs as they faced Shaq Barrett, Ndamukong Suh, and an elite pass rush of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who played their two best performances, according to DVOA, in the last two playoff games of the season. The Warriors lost Game 1, then took Game 2 against the Toronto Raptors. The Chiefs jumped out to a 3-0 lead in the Super Bowl, and Mahomes faced pressure on four of his first seven pass attempts that ended 1-for-7 for 3 yards, and yet it was 3-0 Kansas City. Then everything went downhill for our two super teams who come to define this era, because Kevin Durant follows an epic Kawhi Leonard performance in Game 4, returns to the game trying to carry Golden State back from down 3-1. Patrick Mahomes found himself down 14-3 after some costly penalties by the team, or by not just costly penalties by his defense and Tyrann Mathieu, but also a couple of touchdowns that end up coming in really handily for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Anyways, Durant scored 11 points in 10 minutes in the first quarter of Game 5. Patrick Mahomes, after down 14-3, went 4-for-4 for 70 yards on the ensuing drive in the second quarter. Kevin Durant tore his Achilles on the very next drive. Patrick Mahomes ran a scramble drill that ended in two pressures and two throwaways, leading to a field goal, and Tom Brady and Antonio Brown going down, and right before halftime, giving them a 21-6 lead. And obviously one is worse than the other. Let me just preface that right now. Obviously Kevin Durant tearing his Achilles is worse than the Chiefs giving up a field goal and going down 15 at half. But the point still stands because the Warriors faced their injuries later in the series than Kansas City. Kansas City was just coming in with the injuries and faced a team that could actually take advantage of their injuries, unlike the Buffalo Bills. But again, as we talked about earlier in the Browns game, remember, after Mahomes goes out of that game and Chad Henne takes over, the Browns outscored Cleveland 14-3 in the last quarter and a half of that football game. So it was Cleveland taking advantage of that opportunity, just not enough to get the victory. So then in the third quarter of Game 6, no more Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson tore his ACL coming off of a dunk attempt, and now sitting here 19 months later, that is still the last time we've seen Klay Thompson step on the basketball court. And on the other side of the coin, coming out of halftime, Leonard Fournette scored a touchdown to put the Bucks up by 19 points. Again, one is understandably much worse than the other, but it's still, for both teams, the same idea of dying a slow, painful death. And I've always been a subscriber of everyone has something. It's more on a personal level so that you can connect and empathize with people in difficult situations instead of judging their pain versus other people's pain, which is then instantly going to minimize your pain, the same way that when people compare Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady to Michael Jordan, it instinctively diminishes the accomplishments of another, the person that you don't side with. So instead, everyone is great. Everyone has something. It's important to look that way because you're going to be less miserable in your life. So anyways, the Warriors claw their way back, even without Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant. And Patrick Mahomes kept scrambling and scrambling and scrambling some more. Steph Curry knocked down a three to give Golden State their first lead of the game. Patrick Mahomes threw a pass parallel to the ground that hit Tyreek Hill in the face mask, which is still one of the most incredible passes that I've seen, surpassing the pass that he had earlier in the game where he's firing a ball as he's being sacked perfectly to the back pylon for Byron Pringle to try and make a one-handed catch, which would have been just utterly unbelievable if he had hauled that in. And then coming down to the end, Steph Curry knocked down a three to give Golden State their first lead of the game. Patrick Mahomes threw a pass parallel to the ground. It hit him in the face mask. But then, down 2 points, Steph Curry missed a game-winning three-pointer with 6.3 seconds left in the game. And down 22 points, Patrick Mahomes threw an interception that put the Tampa Bay Buccaneers into victory formation. Just like that, the Toronto Raptors and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, whose championships look strikingly similar if you really think about it, both of them hold up the championship trophies, defeating the depleted super teams and leaving infinite room for judgment to judge the legacies of Kevin Durant, even though he only played 12 minutes in the entire NBA Finals that they lost, or raining judgment upon Patrick Mahomes, who had surgery on his foot 2 days after the Super Bowl ended and left in a vulnerable position, took more pressures than any quarterback in the history of the or in this NFL season, not the history of the NFL, most pressures by a quarterback in this NFL season and the most in the history of the Super Bowl since they've been tracking the stat, which I think goes back to like 2006 or something. So to the history books, these super teams go down as championship losers. And I sound like a loser because I'm still defending Mahomes, which a lot of people are doing because Mahomes played awesome. But for those who lived through these games, who lived through and remember the 2019 NBA Finals, remember that? It was before the pandemic. It felt like, feels like a million years ago now, but it was only 19 months ago. And for the people who remember, actually, I guess it was 20 months ago. It's February now. But for the people who remember this Super Bowl years from now and remember the context behind the game, people know that context and nuance can be applied to recognize that, hey, we know that these are super teams. We know what we're seeing right in front of our eyes of how good the Chiefs and the Warriors really are. And for Kansas City, it's going to take a significant rebound to get back to a third straight Super Bowl. And I bet against them making it back to the Super Bowl. At football, it's so hard to be able to do it. Even the Warriors, who made it to five straight championships under two different, basically, regimes, because, again, I've said forever, it's the reason Kevin Durant was the best player in the NBA pre-Achilles injury, is that Kevin Durant was the balance of power for the Warriors. They needed Kevin Durant to get back to the NBA Finals. And with those two different eras, even the Warriors succumbed at the very end of it once Durant left and the dynasty was closed. And for Mahomes in Kansas City, I don't think they will get back. Again, I think they're the favorites. They'll end up getting back, which is whatever, a year from now. So we're just gasbagging right now to say that this would be the case. But anyways, even as Mahomes makes his full recovery, it's very early to figure all that out. And it is a testament to both of these teams because we know what we're seeing in front of our eyes. And it's really some special kind of remarkable to see all of it play out as it's continued to play out with the Kansas City Chiefs and with the Golden State Warriors. It's been super fascinating throughout the last 2 months to see how the Kansas City Chiefs have dominated the sport, gone into basically the mode where it's just like we're waiting for them to reach the playoffs, and to not end up with the trophy because of injuries. It's always bitter to swallow, but you can still remember the context for years down the road that, like, yeah, injuries totally succumbed this football team against a really good pass rush in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And offensively for Tampa Bay, they just got benefits of penalties and some great pass plays and Tom Brady having 126 passer rating, which was excellent, worthy of Super Bowl MVP, even if it's as a legacy thing. It's the reason I don't really pay attention to who gets Super Bowl MVP, because the past however many years, it's confusing how they get to this process, because it's just like they have to give the trophy to someone, and the process to get to that someone is strange. But from the Tom Brady standpoint, because I guess I never really got to this at the beginning, like, I feel like I have been retired by Tom Brady. Like, betting against him was fun for all these years, but it's not fun when it's to be miserable. And I realized that long ago. It's the reason I don't really root for the Lakers anymore. It's the reason I don't get super invested in football, even as great as Patrick Mahomes is. I don't really get deeply invested in football. It's the reason why, as I grew older, I don't have the same relevance for I have to sit down and watch this game at that time, or I don't have the same relevance for college football, which the entire purpose of college football is to invest way too much of your emotional stability into a college or university that you never even attended. And so as all of that has mellowed out, as all of my childhood fascinations have started to mellow out, I start to look at the bigger picture. And the one that I've held on to, or one of the very few that I've held on to, apart from my San Diego Padres, because even that, I have more nuance than I ever have before on that opinion. I'm not going to ride or die with every pitch or every result like crazy fans do, because it's passionate, it's fun, but it also makes you miserable. Because all but one team is going to end up winning the championship. And if you're a team who commands winning a championship for you to be happy, man, you're going to reach the mountaintop and realize the mountaintop isn't as great as you thought it would be. It's not going to be as great as you've always hoped and dreamed and sacrificed it to be. I know this because of the victory machine. Again, Ethan Strauss, like Kevin Durant, got to the mountaintop and realized that it wasn't everything that he ever wanted, and he would get the vindication he'd always wanted, like LeBron James. No, it wasn't like that. Getting to the mountaintop doesn't answer all of your problems. Like, it's just you've done it, and you're standing at the mountaintop. You've worked your way up. You've gotten there, and now you get to take a photo, and now you get to climb down. And the climb down is always less fun than the way up, because what you're climbing down to is the return to regular life. And nobody really likes regular life, which is why getting too invested in sports, which don't actually matter in the grand scheme of things, is a super good idea. Which is why Tom Brady has now retired me. I have grown old. I have grown to have a little more nuance. Absolutely amazing. And so he's done it. He has retired me before Father Time has retired him. Which is kind of just remarkable to think about. But, yeah, this is a fun couple of weeks until it wasn't fun anymore. And so I realize now that it's just better to just be nuanced, to just enjoy it. Just sit back and enjoy it, no matter who's playing, no matter what power it is. Because I did this with the Patriots. It's just Tom Brady that I held on to the powers with, which unfortunately the Patriots stunk and the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, which was just – to my detriment, but it wouldn't be Tom Brady without being to my detriment, psychologically and emotionally. Tom Brady is one of the great detriments in my life, and I'm not going to do that anymore. So congratulations, Tom Brady, on a fantastic Super Bowl title. All right, I think from context of this to maybe not, but this might be the last time we talk Super Bowl. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I guess we'll find out. But this might be the last time that I have Super Bowl conversations. It was here on the Take It Easy radio show, at least a deep, nuanced analysis of the game, now 3 days removed from a game that wasn't actually that good, but it's the Super Bowl, so we do that anyways, because it's the pinnacle of the sports calendar. But, yeah, I think that's why I was starting to take the Chiefs and Warriors element of it, was because analyzing the game 3 days later, like, I've moved on from that. I moved on from that by Monday when the podcast dropped and after I created all that content. Like, yeah, I'd moved on. It's the new year, baby. It's like January 2nd and you're still celebrating New Year's Eve. Like, Yeah, that New Year's Eve party was fun, but it's January 2nd now, the start of the new calendar year. So I think that's the last time I'll talk about Tom Brady for a while. That's probably better for me. But you know who we can talk about now? Russell Wilson. Because now the internet wants to have the craziest offseason of crazy craziness that has ever crazied the history of craziness. Because Deshaun Watson is on his way out, which we'll get to that in a little bit too, that this news that came in this afternoon around the president of the Houston Texans. But anyways, Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson yesterday had, I don't know how Dan Patrick did this, but Russell Wilson has this amazing story that's getting leaked. So on Monday, there's reports that teams are calling about Russell Wilson and that the Seahawks are turning them away because, you know, it's Russell Wilson. Why would you trade Russell Wilson unless your franchise is just totally incompetent like the Houston Texans? But then Russell Wilson had some stokings to this fire because Russell Wilson is reportedly unhappy with the way that the Seattle Seahawks management has built an offensive line around him. And Russell Wilson, we don't ever hear these frustrations from a quarterback, but in this offseason, where 15 of the top 25 quarterbacks are available to be had, including Deshaun Watson, like it's changing the narrative in the way that we do this stuff. So Derek Carr is all of a sudden available. And I've been saying for a while, if you can't get one of these rookie quarterbacks, get Derek Carr, get Derek Carr out of there, trying to recoup some value there and try and trade up and all that wonderful jazz. Maybe work out a deal with the Lions or the Panthers to go up and get one of those quarterbacks. But anyways, the Seahawks shop Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is a little unhappy about it. And then out of nowhere, he's on the Dan Patrick show talking about how, you know, his offensive line hasn't been good, which is interesting. I mean, it's true, but it's just fascinating to hear it coming out of Russell Wilson's mouth, because Russell Wilson had the number 16 ranked offensive line last year, and it was the best offensive line he's had since 2015, back when Marshawn Lynch was the head of the offense. Like, think how crazy that is. Since 2015, he's had no top half offensive lines. Top half in the entire league, nothing. The only good offensive lineman he has on that team is Dwayne Brown, who they pilfered from the Houston Texans quietly during that magical Bill O'Brien summer where he got rid of all of those old dudes that were on the roster when he took over power because Jack Easterby fired the old GM and assumed power himself and gave Bill O'Brien the power to final decision-making over trades, which Bill O'Brien would sign off on pretty much anything. So that leaves you in a position where all of a sudden Russell Wilson has one good offensive lineman and just crap across the rest of the team. And so he voices this displeasure and the internet just erupts around, oh my goodness, is Russell Wilson unhappy in Seattle? Which, maybe he's unhappy, but he's also very much beloved there. And it would be jarring to see Russell Wilson leave Seattle. Now, remember, 2 years ago, there were rumors around Russell Wilson leaving Seattle, and those were quelled when he got a 5-year contract extension with the Seahawks that made him, I think 2 years from now, he'll make $50 million a year, which is crazy to think about. But there were talks like Russell Wilson going to the Giants. Does Russell Wilson want to force his way out of Seattle because he's entering the last year of his contract? Do the Seahawks want to pay Russell Wilson a record-setting deal? And obviously Russell Wilson was great. This was followed up by a year he finished fifth in the MVP. He finished second in the MVP last year. And I believe he finished fourth in the MVP this year, fifth in the MVP, sixth in the MVP, maybe sixth in the MVP this year, but still no first-place vote. And so Russell Wilson is voicing displeasure. And this is just the power of what this offseason has. Because if we go down the list and we played quarterback roulette on Tuesday, so if you're interested, we're looking at potentially Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Derek Carr, Sam Darnold, Jimmy Garoppolo being on the move. Stafford and Jared Goff both got traded already last week, which was, I think we talked about, just a bonkers way of going about that. Drew Brees is going to retire. Phillip Rivers has retired. I'm just going real quick. Kirk Cousins could potentially be had for the right price if someone was willing to overpay. Dak Prescott is probably going back, but could technically be available. The Broncos are looking to upgrade at the quarterback position. Miami is looking to upgrade. The Panthers are looking to upgrade at the quarterback position. Like, you could have pretty much over half of the starting quarterbacks in the league. Matt Ryan is available to be had. And of course, all the rookie quarterbacks as well, changing the way this landscape is going about. So you could have pretty much anyone that's not a rookie quarterback or like Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers. And even Aaron Rodgers has trade rumors around him, which is just funny to think about. But anyways, so we're left in this interesting position with Russell Wilson where everyone is losing their gosh darn mind. And this is going to be one of those two-day stories, I have a feeling, and it's going to pass. But it was just – it's interesting to hear Russell Wilson be vocal about the frustration that he has because there's not a lot of pressure that he can put on the organization. They've moved on from their picks. The way that the Seahawks, much like the Rams, the way that the Seahawks are going to get better is by hitting on some of these late-round picks, which is the way they won the Super Bowl. But since then, their track record hasn't been great in the drafting process. I think Bobby Wagner is the closest thing they have to a homegrown, like, mega talent. DK Metcalf was huge, but obviously it's on the offensive side of the ball, which helps Russell Wilson be awesome, but he also wants the time to be able to run these plays. And so he was also trying to make input on the offensive coordinator hire. And they fired Brian Schottenheimer. I forgot who they hired as the offensive coordinator. Shane Waldron. That is the offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. So they hired this new person coming over from the Rams. So they're going to run this interesting offense. And I don't remember if Russell Wilson wanted him or not, but it was interesting because, so Russell Wilson did indeed approve this guy, Shane Waldron, who is the passing game coordinator for the Rams. They approved him as the coach. So the key part of this offense now with the Rams, and this makes a lot of sense as I'm connecting the dots right now, is the fact that offensive line is huge for the Seattle Seahawks. It's huge for them in their efforts to run this offense because you need time. You need time for plays to develop in this offense. You need time to run play action. Like, the offensive line is huge. And I don't know what the options are for the Seahawks. Is it trade for Trent Brown from the Raiders? No, because you don't have enough first-round picks. So is it draft a good offensive lineman? Well, you don't have first-round picks, but maybe you're hoping that one of these later-round picks can pan out. So the struggles on the offensive line are obviously going to be frustrating to Wilson. I don't think Russell would part now, but I did say this when Pete Carroll got his four-year contract extension, is that if the Seahawks, and I reinforced this after they got eliminated, if the Seahawks don't win this year, this deal is going to start looking really icky. And lo and behold, the brakes fell off for the Seahawks at the end of the year. They went from number one seed in the NFC in week 7 to losing in the wild card round to the Rams in one of the worst performances I've seen from anyone in a while, which I think is probably just going back to Lamar Jackson going 2 hours without completing a pass against the Chargers. But anyways, the Seahawks took an L and they have no first round picks, which you can survive from, but it's instrumental that you hit on these later round picks. And like I said, the Seahawks post Legion of Boom have not had a great track record on nailing these picks. So Seattle is in this position where they're going to need help on the offensive line. They're going to need to bring in a couple of new guys to try and help out. And maybe it's the same garbage it's always been, but the new guys are going to be big for them to try and get some level of protection up front. Some level of help is going to be huge. And they really haven't had that help apart from Dwayne Brown, who we mentioned earlier, since they traded Max Unger for Jimmy Graham. And that seems to kind of be the theme that they've gone on, is they've applied help to everywhere else. Jamal Adams, great. Bobby Wagner, pretty great. You can go further down the list to, what's his name? DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. These are great additions. But it hasn't been on the offensive line specifically, and so a lot of it, as we saw with the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, a lot can go south if you don't have that offensive line reinforced. And that can be kind of worrisome as they go forward. But one thing that I have seen that gives me hope for Seattle is that they seem to know what they want to do on offense. Because everything fell apart once Schottenheimer went away from the let Russ cook thing, and they didn't really have the dynamic offense towards the end of the season. It's the reason Schottenheimer got fired. But this feels like the last ride regardless with Russell Wilson. Like, it just feels like just sometimes teams wear out their welcome. And I don't think Pete Carroll's going to be around very long, even though he got a 4-year extension, which didn't make a lot of sense at the time. And John Schneider got an 8-year extension from the Seahawks. And Pete Carroll still has the executive say over personnel over John Schneider. But I don't think Pete Carroll's going to last. And if Pete Carroll does last, I don't think Russell Wilson's going to last. I think this marriage is coming to an end, and we knew this before last season, because I did a podcast during the quarantine, the case for and against firing Pete Carroll and Mike Zimmer, where I think this year they would both have been on the hot seat, and Pete Carroll would have been coming up on the end of his contract, the end of next season, and I could have seen him walking away. Not because he's not a great coach, and he is. We actually did an episode with Stripe Pipe last week where we jokingly started ranking coaches. But I thought they were going to walk away, kind of like with what happened with D'Antoni and the Rockets in the NBA. Like sometimes, or Joe Maddon and the Cubs in MLB is a great example of this. Sometimes you've done all you can. Windows aren't going to stay open forever, especially when you're making poor personnel decisions. And you're constantly changing offensive coordinators, and you never have an offensive line in the top half for the last 5 seasons of Russell Wilson. Sometimes it's just you wear out your welcome. Sometimes you've been together for 12 years, or in the case of Russell Wilson and them, 10 years, as it will be at the end of next year. And after 10 years with the same coach, the same quarterback, it's natural to wear out your welcome. Because after 10 years, you guys know each other too well. You've been doing the same job forever that it's not stimulating. It's not entertaining. And there's only such a ceiling you can accomplish with the personnel that is being brought in. So it didn't make any sense to me that Pete Carroll got an extension, even though the Seahawks were 6-1 at that time. Like, it didn't make sense that they would get that contract extension, because what are you going to do? Are you going to go 6 years with the same Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson marriage and hope that miraculously out of nowhere you start bringing in some elite talent that puts you over the edge before Russell Wilson starts to decline out of his prime, which might not actually happen because we're seeing how the rules of aging have changed with Aaron Rodgers winning MVP at 37 and Tom Brady winning MVP at 41 and, you know, Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers, even though Phillip Rivers got to be washed by the time he hit 39. Like, we're seeing the rules change on this, and Russell Wilson's going to be 32. And are you going to roll out 6 years with Pete Carroll and Russ? There's no chance. There's no chance you can roll out 6 years with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, because I barely think this marriage can last 1 year or 2 years. So it didn't make a lot of sense that Pete got the extension that he did, but John Schneider got it too, which is starting to make me think as I talk this out that maybe Russell is the guy to go. If Pete's going to get a 4-year extension, John Schneider's going to get an 8-year extension, and you trust those guys to build back up the roster because they've never had a 9-win or loss season. I know that there's the Patriot argument with Brady and Belichick, but even they wore out their welcome by the end. By the end of it, they wore out the welcome. There was legitimate beef when Belichick tried to trade Brady to the 49ers. And from then on, there was always just a little something there. And so it's not going to last forever. And we're already starting to see the walls cave in a little bit. And this is not an overreaction. Like, Russell Wilson's going to be a Seahawk next year. He's probably going to be a Seahawk the year after that. But the Seahawks might miss the playoffs next year. As great as Russell Wilson is, as great as Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner are, the Seahawks are going to need a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense to compete with the Rams. And if you're sitting in that wild card round on the road, like they did not this last year, but the year before that and the year before that, when they lost to Dallas and they lost to Green Bay, well, then all of a sudden you start looking around and you think to yourself, where are you as a franchise? Yeah, you won the division this year. It wasn't resounding. And you lost in the playoffs to a team that's in your division. So now you've essentially gone three straight years, really five straight years, if you want to go back to the loss. They lost. They missed the playoffs in 2015 when everything was falling apart and they had a ton of injuries that year. And Cam Chancellor went out. Richard Sherman went out. Just a rough year of injuries. And then after that, it's losing the divisional round, losing the wild card, losing the wild card, losing the divisional round, losing the wild card. At some point, that's going to wear thin. Like, it's been 5 years of the exact same team, and at some point, it's going to either implode or you're going to be able to get the talent that in to take the next step. And Russell Wilson's trying to inform the Seahawks of that quietly, ever so quietly, that you're going to have to get some talent in here if you want to take the next step. And they, Lord knows, they've been trying. DK Metcalf was awesome. Rashad Penny was their best effort to bring in a run game. They traded two firsts for Jamal Adams. Lord knows they're trying. But everyone's trying, and everyone's working under the same parameters. And Seattle hasn't been that great, but neither has Bill Belichick. It's not an indictment of the people. It's just the results, and never play the results to determine how good or bad someone is at their job. If you play the results, then you're just going to get the results don't tell who's doing good or who's doing bad at their job. Because just because you don't get a job, like people who are the greatest sports commentators, people who are the greatest, you know, inventors, people who are the great people in Silicon Valley and business leaders, like they were turned down from jobs all the time. Playing the results is not, and those are the most extreme examples, to be fair. Those are just extreme versions of what we're talking about. It can be as simple as just because you were qualified for a job and they didn't hire you doesn't mean you weren't good enough for the job. Or just because you scored a 80 on a test doesn't mean you don't know what you're talking about. The results don't tell you that you know 80% of what you're talking about. You might know more, you might know less. It's just what you scored on a test. And so in the case of Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, you're just kind of sitting there waiting to see how this is all going to play out. I think they probably have two more years together before one of these things is going to give. Maybe it's Russell, maybe it's Pete. But one of these things is going to give sooner or later. I just don't know who it's going to be right now. Because do you want to Russell Wilson is young enough where – and Pete Carroll is old enough where you could make the case for saying, we're going to keep Russell Wilson. We're going to rebuild around Russell Wilson into his late 30s. The Packers did it with Mike McCarthy, which was a little bit of an easier decision because you kind of knew that Mike McCarthy was not very good offensive play calling. With Pete Carroll, he's not doing the play calling, but they also haven't had great offenses the past however many. They've gone through two offensive coordinators, now three offensive coordinators in 4 years. So they haven't been great on that side, but, you know, it's really tough, like, trying to figure out how it's going to go. And I suspect Pete will be the one to go, which is why, I mean, for the Seahawks, he just lost some money by giving him a four-year contract extension. But all in all, I think they're going to end up being they're going to be together next year. Like, let's pump the brakes on the trade thing, but let's also acknowledge the fact that the Seahawks do have some stuff they're working through, and this could be the end of the beginning of the end for the Seattle Seahawks. And I think they probably have 2 years left. I think probably 2 years before one of these things is going to give, either Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll is going to give. And I guess it's early on to figure out, but I guess we're, because it's shocking to hear. It's not that Russell Wilson said anything flamboyant. His offensive lines are terrible. It's just strange to hear it from Russell Wilson. That's the only thing that I found like strange about all of this. All right, let's talk about our BFF Jack Easterby for a little bit here, and then I'll get to maybe some Jason Tatum real quick at the end. So this afternoon, Texans president Jamie Roots resigns, which I kind of just want to read this article, actually. So we're going to do a segment here called Reading, and this is from Defector. It's a website that's similar to Deadspin, where it's people talking about sports, but they're doing it from not the buttoned up way that you're talking about. I like Defector in the way that they do stuff. So Jack Easterby has now outlasted the Texans president. So yeah, Jamie Roots, the Houston Texans president, who last year published a 146-page book on business success and promoted it in an email after the team fell to 2-7, resigned today in what seemed like an indication that he had lost a power struggle to a pastor. Supposedly, his departure had been in the works for a few weeks. Side note before I continue reading, this comes off of a report yesterday that the Texans appear to be gutting former team staffers who are basically they're trying to sow total loyalty to Jack Easterby and to Cal McNair. So Jamie Roots has left. Now back to the story. When the Texans fired public relations director Amy Plasek this past November, Roots has taken credit for the decision, saying, quote, he felt the need to make a change. A separate report from ESPN's Adam Schefter said Plasek, the only woman who had full responsibilities over the PR arm of an NFL team, was told she wasn't a, quote, cultural fit. The month before, the Texans had fired Bill O'Brien after an 0-4 start. The two firings, along with the record, suggested the future was dire. Somehow, between November and now, the Texans' future has become much more dire. Team owner Cal McNair and Vice President of Football Operations Jack Easterby have alienated Deshaun Watson to the point where the quarterback never wants to play for them again, fired beloved team employees, ignored professional input on the search for a head coach, and they are seeking some sort of desire for unconditional loyalty from everyone who works for the Texans. Easterby, who joined the team only 2 years ago, still has a job in it and Cal McNair's ear, the owner of the team. Meanwhile, Roots, who has worked for the Texans since its inception in 2002, is gone. From an objective point of view, it's amazing that the man who recently wrote The Winning Game Plan, a proven leadership playbook for continuous business success, just had his lunch eaten by a former team chaplain whose entire knowledge of football operations could fit on the point of a holy nail. So Jack Easterby continues his coup of the Houston Texans, which is unbelievable to think about. Now he's gutting the organization of people who had dissent against him, which is dictator 101. Suppress all dissent against you. He is going straight to the dictator formula. And Cal McNair is eating this shit up. It's unbelievable how this has gone down. And we've done a podcast on this. You can find Easterby's 11, how a former team pastor staged a coup of the Houston. Utterly ridiculous how all of this has gone down. And so we're looking around now, and you see from a more deep, nuanced, complex point of view that all of a sudden the Houston Texans are just – they're just ransacked as an organization. And Deshaun Watson is never going to play for them again. As much as they have said that we intend for Deshaun to play for us again, he is never going to take another snap for the Houston Texans. It's just not going to happen. And so the trade will probably not happen either until well after the draft, because I suspect the most possible dysfunction, or at least I'm accounting for dysfunction in the Texans, that they would trade after the draft Deshaun Watson, not be able to get any draft picks from this year's draft, and have to wait it out until next year when they get Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins' not good draft pick, and all of the other stuff that comes along with it. So the Houston Texans are a tire fire. They're one of these organizations that's going to be bad for a very long time. I proposed the trade on quarterback roulette that Tua Tagovailoa goes to the Tua Tagovailoa goes to the Panthers in a three-team trade, and then they start Colt McCoy or Cam Newton and go for the number one pick next year, which seems to be kind of the methodology here for the Texans, because your franchise is going to suck for a while. So you might as well just go for it right now and just suck. Just if your team, which should have been 7-9, but really went 4-12, if that team that was below 500 has seven stars and you're subtracting four of them right off the bat, you are a rebuilding team. You're losing Deshaun Watson. You're losing J.J. Watt. You're losing Brandon Cooks. You're losing Will Fuller. Time to rebuild. Time to just tear it all down and start again. And the Deshaun Watson trade is going to start that, but it's just nuts that Easterby continues his coup of the organization. And now with this story today about the president who's been there for 20 years, 20 damn years, getting fired, it's unbelievably remarkable that all of this has gone down the way that it has gone down. And it's just, it's dysfunction, and it's in plain view. I don't think, as long as I can remember, the dysfunction has been quite in as plain view, but I also don't think I've ever been as informed as I've been until now to be able to recognize the dysfunction that is right in front of our eyes. And now the team president, who's been there for 20 years, gets ousted by Jack Easterby because he's got the power. Nick Caserio has the executive power of decision-making, and you're left with an organization in shambles, and Deshaun Watson wants no part of it. And he will not play another game for the Texans. Again, mark my words on that one. Let's talk Jason Tatum real quick before we get off here, because it seems like the last 10 minutes I've carved out for basketball-related purposes. But Jason Tatum and the Celtics are in fourth place in the East. And I was going through the Eastern Conference standings, and it felt perfect the way that the standings would form out about who the best players in the Eastern Conference are, because it goes Nets, Kevin Durant, Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're both kind of just one or two, depending on how you feel about each of them. 76ers, Joel Embiid, who's been an MVP frontrunner this year, probably behind LeBron James from what I hear, but Joel Embiid right up there along with what I would argue Jokic, which is another interesting thing, why Jokic's numbers have been so crazy, but the team has been losing games. I haven't really figured that out. Is Jamal Murray out or something? But anyways. And then fourth place is the Celtics and Jason Tatum, and this feels exactly like where Jason Tatum is. And the other thing that made me think about this was the returns on the NBA All-Star votes, which we talked about last Thursday on the podcast, that Jason Tatum was behind those three players I just mentioned, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, for a starting spot in the front court of the Eastern Conference All-Stars. And this feels exactly like where Jason Tatum's role is. And whether Jason Tatum can make the next jump, I don't know. He's still young enough where he's not even close to his prime yet. I think Jason Tatum is like 25, younger than that even. I think he might be like 23, maybe 24. Watch it be 24. Watch it be right down the middle of what I said. 22. Jason Tatum is – he turns 23 in less than a month, but he's almost 23. So he's the fourth best player in the Eastern Conference. Well, no, James Harden's now there. So he's the fifth best player in the Eastern Conference. Well, Chris Middleton. Yeah, he's the fifth best player in the Eastern Conference at age 22, which is pretty damn remarkable. But the Celtics have been waiting for a while. They've kind of been in this purgatory, right? Like Jason Tatum's rookie year, they almost made that weird run to the finals where Scary Terry kind of filled the Kyrie Irving role and Gordon Hayward was out, but they still came within one game of the NBA Finals. It was really weird. And Tatum had this emergence as a legitimate number two, and now he's a legitimate number one, and he's 22 years old, and he's a perennial all-star, and he's great. He looks like Carmelo Anthony, but can shoot three-pointers instead of mid-range twos. Like, Jason Tatum looks amazing, and I don't know how much longer the Celtics want to wait to be able to start actually winning, and whether or not you can win with Jason Tatum as your number one, or whether you're just this team that the Celtics have been for a couple of years now. Where in 2019, lost in the second round when everything was imploding, lost in the second round to the Milwaukee Bucks, who went on to lose to Toronto in the conference finals. And then last year in the bubble, made it to the Eastern Conference Finals by beating the Raptors, who they were about equal to. They were obviously better than the Raptors, but it went to seven games thanks to a couple of prayers by the Raptors to keep them in the series. So obviously better, benefited by not having to see the Bucks, but then lost to the Miami Heat, a team they probably feel like they should have beaten. Like, they would have been the Miami Heat in the fluky team that makes the finals, but with Jason Tatum as your starter, the finals is the best you can ask for when you have the fifth best player in the Eastern Conference and a legitimate big three with Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown and what was Gordon Hayward for a little bit. So if that's the best you can ask for from the Celtics' point of view, and you didn't get there. Now, this year, you're clearly behind the Nets. The Nets have improved well beyond you. They have two players on their team better than your best player. They probably don't have three, but they have at least two. They have Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant, and they have James Harden. And the Bucks have one player clearly better than you and a second that's right on your level in Chris Middleton. And a third best player better than your second best player. Well, Jaylen Brown's kind of about the same. But anyways, it's all just ad nauseum at this point. Clearly Milwaukee is better than you. Clearly Brooklyn is better than you. For the moment, the 76ers look much better than you, and they have a player better than you in Joel Embiid. So are you content to continue riding it out in this second-round exit group where last year you made it to the conference finals, but Miami and the Bucks was really the Eastern Conference Finals. Those were the two best teams in the East. And then you guys battled it out with Toronto, who's one of these middling teams that fell apart because Pascal Siakam was a fluke. So are you content to just keep riding it out there until Jason Tatum develops? Because that's okay. If you're waiting for Jason Tatum to become a superstar, how patient are you willing to be? I know he's 22, and I know he's going to be there for a long time. How patient are you willing to be? Because as we saw with the last Celtics run, these windows aren't open for very long. They made it to two consecutive Eastern Conference Finals, then lost in the second round, then lost in the Eastern Conference Finals again, and this year I don't expect they'll make a run to the Conference Finals. So it's really good. It's like probably the most consistent team of the last 5 years. Are you content to keep riding it out here? I'm not saying trade Jason Tatum. Under no circumstances should you trade Jason Tatum. But what about Jaylen Brown? What about maybe trying to package Jaylen Brown for a player as good, if not better, than Jason Tatum when the opportunity presents itself, which the opportunity did present itself with James Harden, and they didn't want to go that route. Maybe it's a game plan. Maybe it's a game plan. I just don't know how long you want to keep riding it out in this purgatory of fourth and third seeds, never really having a chance to make it to the finals without some good breaks going your way. And even then, you lose to the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in to the Take It Easy radio show. We release episodes of the podcast every single day on this radio show. We are here Wednesdays and Thursdays, 3 o'clock Central Time Zone. I'm out on the West Coast, so it's 1 o'clock. It's really 2 o'clock now because the episode's coming to an end. Subscribe on Open Talk Radio. Subscribe to the podcast as well. If you enjoy all the content that we do here, check as you can find us all over the place. Find us on Instagram as well and our blog. Oh, too much stuff to plug. The best place to find us is definitely here on Open Talk Radio as well as the podcast. So check that out. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you and take it easy.